the vision of America in 1776 was especially a vision of Thomas Jefferson. I want you to imagine Jefferson at the time. In 1775, he became the youngest delegate to the Continental Congress. He was from Virginia. And his current work before he went to Philadelphia for the Continental Congress was to help to create a constitution for Virginia. And in his work on that Virginia Constitution, he developed many of the ideas that gradually made their way into the Declaration of Independence and later into the Constitution. And I want you to imagine Jefferson at the age of 32. Think if this were the 21st century instead of the 18th century. Think about how he would be sharing his ideas using his smartphone, typing frantically with his thumbs, and tweeting out messages of hope and a vision for a new way of government. Power. The early debates in America, the early struggle in America, the reason for the revolution was power. Power. Who has the power to tell the people what to do? The struggle between the colonists and Britain really was about whether the colonists would have any say in the laws that were passed. And the King of England didn't really care. The king felt that it was the king's right to make decisions for the colonies, for all the people. And as these loyal British citizens, those American colonists in those 13 colonies, as they struggled with the continuing disregard of their needs and their ideas and their understanding of their own situation, they gradually became radicalized. They became revolutionaries because the king persisted in not seeing what was happening in America, not hearing their voices, having no empathy for the people who were coping with a completely different life and existence than the king could ever imagine. Another early debate around the time of the American Revolution was the early struggle to conceive of religious freedom, just to conceive of religious freedom. The very idea was new. The very idea was unaccepted, so that even in the colony of Virginia, where Thomas Jefferson argued forcefully for religious freedom, for tolerance of other religions, Virginia was putting people in jail because they had religious views that did not reflect those of the established church in Virginia, which was the American version of the Anglican Church. And Jefferson was speaking and advocating on behalf of Baptists and Quakers who could be jailed or exiled for heresy. And this was one of the ideas that he took to Philadelphia. And it was one of the ideas that he advocated for over a period of years until finally the First Amendment was added to the American Constitution. And the idea that we have the right of free speech, the free exercise of religion, and that the state, the federal government, does not establish a religion for the people, finally became the law of the land. But these ideas in 1776 were in their infancy. And today we sometimes don't realize how new the whole concept of government by the people was in 1776. We don't realize how new the concept of religious freedom and free speech was. And voting rights. Who should vote? In the Virginia Constitution's development, Jefferson was also an advocate to giving voting rights to immigrants and the ability to hold office whether or not someone held property. He said that he was in favor of extending the right to vote, all the rights of a citizen, to anyone who had the permanent intention of living in Virginia. He said, whoever intends to live in a country must wish that country well and has a natural right of assisting in the preservation of it. And that's an idea that America gradually seized onto. It's an idea that became much more widespread. It's an idea that even in our immigration laws is still present. But today, we also see a new struggle for the right of immigrants to be in the United States and to be able to gain citizenship through some rational process. The welfare of the people was a central notion in the American Revolution. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that's in the Declaration of Independence. It's also implicitly in the Constitution. The preamble starts with the words, "We the people," the first three words of the Constitution. These ideas are grounded in the Declaration of Independence, this idea that people are the ones with the power, and that the purpose of government is to promote the general welfare. And implicit in these ideas is a distinction between government by monarchy and government by the people. The Constitution carries forward the Declaration's understanding that the people are the source of power. This really was revolutionary. The Declaration says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." They had a little trouble with that. The men, that's how they thought, the blinders on. They left a lot of people out when they defined men in their minds. But all men are created equal. That was radical. That they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That's the core, that government derives its power from the people, and the point of the power is to provide for the well-being of the people. We don't give up the power so that government can harm us. We give up the power so that government can ensure safety and happiness. That's in the Declaration. So when we fast forward to 2017 and compare today with 1776, it's really easy to see that this struggle continues, but in a different form. Jefferson and his contemporaries had to fight a war to gain freedom from the British monarchy. We struggle too with the effort to make sure that government serves the people, to make sure that our elected representatives remember that the people hold the power and that they are in place to serve the needs of the people, not simply to line their pockets or serve the interests of the wealthy or the corporations or any other being than the people. So the problem is that perspectives are different. So I'm sure that most of the elected representatives in our Congress believe they have the best interests of the nation at heart. But the problem is that the perspectives differ. Just as in 1776, Jefferson wrote that all men are created equal, and now we understand that that word men needs to be people, we have a different perspective than the perspective of 1776. The British king had a different perspective from the American colonists. Differences in experience, in education, in who we encounter along the way. These differences create different perspectives. So here's an example from 1775, the Boston Massacre. Jefferson wrote in a letter in May 1775 that the Boston Massacre had cut off our last hope of reconciliation, and a frenzy of revenge, he said, seems to have seized all ranks of people. And he talked about how unfortunate it was that Massachusetts governor, instead of acting as a mediator and really listening, instead of taking steps to lead to reconciliation of the divided populace, that instead he, and this is a direct quote, he pursued the incendiary purpose of still blowing up the flames, as we find him constantly doing in every speech and public declaration. Jefferson said that a little knowledge of human nature would make a huge difference. Attention to the ordinary workings of human nature might have, he said, foreseen that the spirits of the people here were in a state in which they were more likely to be provoked. A little knowledge of the ordinary workings of human nature and attention to what was going on with the people. In 2017, here's another example, healthcare. Healthcare. The perspective of people who are drafting the healthcare legislation are elected representatives. Seems to be quite different from the perspective of the people who fear the loss of access to health care. The Senate bill has support from a minuscule percentage of the population, from 17% is the highest estimate I've seen, and that's everyone, not just one party, to as low as 12%. Imagine. Jefferson said in 1776, I believe the decisions of the people in a body will be more honest and more disinterested than those of wealthy men. Think about 13 male senators in a locked room making decisions about what would go into the health care legislation. How do we resolve differences that arise from a difference in perspective? Because that's how differences arise, from differences in perspective. The idea that these aren't cuts to Medicaid, but we're simply returning it to the previous level. You know, that the arsonist says, well, I didn't burn down the house, I simply returned the ground to its previous level. Footnote, Stephen Colbert. Think how powerful and insidious are these differences in perspective, and the only way Well, it's not the only way. One way is to really listen to what the people need, to what their experiences are. But there are other ways. Revolution, that worked in 1776. It's not the first choice. What about Twitter wars? You know, it's not quite so violent. But no, I mean, really, that's not actually a way to create positive change. And shouting matches, which it seems so many of the representatives of the Congress are experiencing in their town halls during this recess as they go back to their constituents and find that there are many questions and concerns about the healthcare legislation. Senator Bill Cassidy faced a contentious town hall in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He repeatedly said to his angry constituents, "You're not being respectful." And they were chanting and shouting. Were they rude? "I'll tell you what's rude," one man retorted, "kicking 22 million people off their health care." And when Cassidy told another speaker that he wasn't being civil, the angry constituent said, "I'm civil. I don't think it's civil to kill people." So these are strong feelings. Cassidy's trying to listen. He really seems to be trying to listen. But not all senators will even hold town halls because they don't want to face the angry crowds. They don't want to hear the voices of the people they represent. Public conversation needs a new model because there has to be a way to bridge the gap in the difference in perspective. One of the things that we have been doing in our Unitarian Universalist congregations is to try to have our inside the walls conversations about contentious issues using a different model, using the stakeholder format. And the goal of a stakeholder meeting is for people to see and hear and feel one another, to see their perspective, to hear about their experiences, to empathize, to feel what they're going through. And what happens when people gather in this way that allows them to be face to face and yet that's structured so it doesn't devolve into a shouting match, is that people can see and hear and feel what others are experiencing, what their perspective is, what their real needs are. Imagine, how many of you have been in a stakeholder meeting here? Quite a few. Imagine if the King of Britain had been willing to sit down in a stakeholder meeting with the Continental Congress. It wasn't going to happen, was it? No. But this model, while within our small faith community, is still illustrative of what needs to happen in our public conversations, unless we want revolution, unless we want oppression. We shouldn't have to choose between revolution and oppression. We shouldn't have to choose between going to war, either literally or metaphorically, and having our elected representatives understand our perspective. We need a new model for public conversation. And that model is present in our democracy today. Not just in our UU congregations and our stakeholder meetings, but in the larger world with the public conversation project of the Zeidler Center for Public Conversation. And they structure public conversations that are like our stakeholder meetings. Public conversations between white police officers and black male teenagers. And these conversations actually work to help people see the perspective of that the different participants bring, so that it's not that people necessarily change their opinions, and opinions, believe me, are overrated, but it changes their ability to empathize. And that eventually helps to shape a different perspective. And if nothing else, people can begin to feel the pain that someone's expressing, even if they don't agree with their conclusion of what should be done about that pain. But without some form of interaction that allows people who have blinders on, like the framers who used the word men, and that's really what they meant, we need a conversation to take off the blinders. We need a conversation where people can really begin to understand the many different perspectives that are present in America today. In our stakeholder meetings, and the most recent one is in the We Worship area, there's a question about, you know, does that, it's meeting the needs of some people, but it also creates noise. Thank you. This is happy noise, right? It's good noise, but it sometimes makes it hard for people with hearing difficulty to hear. And so in our stakeholder meetings, the last one, and the next one is this Saturday, this a week from yesterday, this coming Saturday, July 8th at 1 p.m. It's really a chance to see and hear and feel what other people are experiencing, a chance to broaden one's own perspective. And, you know, the most common question that we ministers have gotten about the We Worship stakeholder meetings, and it's been many, many people have asked this question, are we going to decide what to do in the stakeholder meeting? And the answer to that question is no. And all too frequently, the response is, okay, well then, I don't really need to go. And so here's why that's not the best step. The old paradigm is that you show up for the vote. You make decisions based on your own opinions, not influenced by the awareness of the different experiences and perspectives of others. And you also work from an assumption, which is absolutely not correct in this old paradigm. The assumption is that listening to people who have a polar opposite point of view is not going to change my mind. Well, actually, that might be true. But what does happen when there's a stakeholder meeting within our UU community, or when there's a public conversation carried out using a similar format, what does happen is that people begin to see a broader perspective of the issues that are in play. And so they begin to discover new ideas that aren't the polar opposites, but that will help the people find solutions that work for most people. It's a much better way. And in fact, the learning around this form of conversation is that without it, you don't find those alternatives. You don't discover the middle ground. You don't even hear from people who inhabit the middle ground. You only hear from the ones engaged in the Twitter wars. So the new paradigm is to actively seek out information, new information about other people's experiences. This approach would place a responsibility on our elected representatives to seek out new information about their constituents' lives and experiences and feelings and needs. Wouldn't that be incredible? Because, you know, America is not actually about who wins. That's the America we know. That's the America we see trumpeted in our public life. But that's not the America of our dreams and the dreams of all the people who struggled and worked to create a new country with a new vision of what government means. The American dream is of we the people who have inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, who create governments to secure those rights, and those governments derive their power from the consent of the governed. Now, consent to shift the power to elected representatives doesn't mean that the governed are necessarily going to agree with every decision. Obviously, that's unlikely to happen. But it does mean that the governed agree to be governed if the elected representatives are governing in a way that serves the needs of the people, that pays attention to the needs of the people. That's actually what the American Revolution was about, and it's clear in the Declaration of Independence. There's a long list of grievances, and basically all of those grievances are, you are not listening to us. Here's what we experience, and you have not listened. You are not responding to what we need, what we know about ourselves and this new land we inhabit. That's what the revolution was about. The need for those who governed to pay attention to the people and their lives. We the people, we have the power, and we merely lend it to a structure of government and to the elected representatives who inhabit that structure. The government isn't there to carry out one political philosophy or another. It's not there to benefit only the ones who have the money and power to make their voices heard in a direct and tangible way. Government is not there to engage in a win-lose battle between polar opposite perspectives. Government exists to promote the general welfare and to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. So see, hear, feel. When our elected representatives create laws without the knowledge or understanding of the lives of we the people, we who are the source of all governmental power, those laws violate the basic premise on which our nation was founded and which is explicit in the Declaration of Independence, adopted July 4th, 1776. Let America be America again. Even if it never was, it still must be. The American experiment has never been perfect, but the dream has been there, struggling to emerge from the imperfections of our humanity. I hear America singing. For more than two centuries, the ordinary American people, the people who hold the true power in our democracy, have worked with courage and grace, with passion and persistence, to make the America we dream of emerge from the reality that's always where we must begin. And yes, sometimes we the people have behaved with short-sightedness and even ill will. But each century, each generation, each new day, it's our privilege and our duty to wake up again, to begin again, to struggle again. And for all that is holy, including our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor, to celebrate again, we the people must redeem all and make America, America again.